Well, we are in week three of our series on the book of the Bible called James, and the series is called Friendship with God. And in this series, we're thinking about questions like, what if as Christians we've set our sights too low? What if faith is deeper and more life-transforming than we've ever imagined? What if we are meant to live in deep friendship with God? Well, as most of you know, I'm a relatively new pastor. Just 4 years ago, I was leading a team of a few engineers and spending most of my time typing on a computer, coding software. Needless to say, there have been quite a few changes over the past 4 years, including another child. But one of the funniest changes to me is the way that people have begun to watch their tongues around me. You know, there were some people I used to work with. They were just, I'm just being real, they were just incapable of uttering a complete sentence without swearing. And, you know, not one of them ever apologized to me. But now I get apologized to all the time. It's just very interesting. You know, my recently deceased mentor, Reverend Dennis Dorsch, he mentored hundreds of people over his years of ministry, one-on-one. And incidentally, I was the 44th person that he mentored who discerned a call to pastoral ministry. In any event, you know, he worked with a lot of people, a lot of really devoted people. But he told me that the people that he mentored tended to struggle with three things. And he called them the three L's: language, lust, and laziness. Well, today I'd like to touch on the first L, language. And usually when we talk about language, you know, we think of it in terms of like the list of dirty words that we shouldn't say. But James pushes us further to think about everything that we say. 2 weeks ago, we read a passage from James chapter 1 that talked about this. He said, "Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to grow angry." And he goes on to say, if those who claim devotion to God don't control what they say, or in another kind of more literal translation, they don't bridle their tongues, they mislead themselves. Their devotion or their worship, their religion is worthless. So clearly James thinks that what we say is really important. And Jesus certainly thought so, which is probably why James is talking about it, because James was the half-brother of Jesus. Jesus taught his disciples not to swear about anything, but simply to be people who, when they said yes, they meant yes, and when they said no, they meant no. And Jesus isn't just out to make nasty people well-behaved. He's out to actually transform them into people who are loving because there is love inside of them. And Jesus says in Matthew chapter 12, "What fills the heart comes out of the mouth. What fills the heart comes out of the mouth." And he goes on to say, good people bring out good things from their good treasure, but evil people bring out evil things from their evil treasure. I tell you that people will have to answer on judgment day for every useless word they speak. By your words, you will either be judged innocent or condemned as guilty. So yeah, I mean, Jesus takes our speech very seriously, and so should we. So James begins to tackle this subject by warning people who are teachers. It's an interesting place to start. Teachers, you know, they can be such an incredible blessing. As I was preparing the sermon, I was just thinking about those teachers in my life who were people that I really respected. You know, they had great lessons, and I learned from them. But then they went that extra mile, and they said a word of encouragement to me. They highlighted something that I hadn't really noticed about myself, or maybe actually they corrected me, and they said, you know, you really need to take care of this or else you're going to be in trouble. Like, those were the people that had a big impact on me. And so the flip side of that is that same potential that gives teachers the ability to have such a positive impact gives them the ability to have a negative impact, because their words carry weight. You know, any mistakes they make, they have potentially severe consequences. And so it seems that because of this, God judges those of us who teach, irony standing up and teaching about this, right? God, this is dangerous stuff, right? God judges those of us who teach with greater strictness, since we're responsible for not leading people astray. But James uses lots of imagery to talk about speech in general and the importance of our speech to help us understand it. And the first image is my favorite. It's about a horse wearing a bridle. And I don't know if this image makes sense to you or not. I grew up around horses, so it makes sense to me. So this is what James says. He says, when we bridle horses and put bits in their mouth to lead them wherever we want, we can control their whole bodies. Does that make sense? Can you just like, okay, that's not making sense. All right. So you've got the bit, which is usually like a piece of metal that goes into the horse's mouth. And, you know, the bits that are the kindest to the horse, they'll just kind of tug at the edges of their mouth. And so all that has to happen is you just have to put a little pressure on one side of the mouth, and that communicates to the horse where the rider wants to go. And you know, the bit is then kept in the horse's mouth by a bridle, which goes around the horse's head. And then finally, the bit has reins attached to it, so the rider sits on the back and can move the bit at a distance and direct the horse that way. So, you know, I took it for granted growing up because you just see someone holding the reins, but it's pretty amazing that this bit, this small little thing, this tiny piece of metal, is able to steer this huge animal. But the reality is that if you control the bit, you can control the mouth. And if you can control the mouth, you can apparently direct the horse to wherever you want. You can control the whole horse. And James says, you know, it's actually the same with us. Okay, go on, James. You know, control the mouth, and you can control the whole body. I like that. He doesn't spell it out because, you know, he's just moving too fast, image after image. He's beating us up, you know? But I think it begs a question if we pause. Who controls your mouth? And, of course, we want to jump in and say, you know, I control my mouth. Or maybe you want to use a more colorful version of it, you know, just for irony. But is that really so? You know, I find, I know so many people who you know, want to clean up the way they talk, but they find themselves completely unable to do it. I mean, they say, it's like I'm not in control anymore. And I know other people who are, they're compassionate, they're gentle people, like in normal circumstances, but in moments of like frustration and offense, they just lose control entirely. They find themselves saying things that they have to apologize for later. And so is it possible that many of us don't actually hold the reins? You know, we feel like we do most of the time, but then those times come when we're pressed and we find ourselves saying things that we don't really want to be saying, but we can't really stop ourselves. And then before you know it, we're in too deep. You know, I didn't ride horses a lot as a child. That was my sister's thing. But I do remember that when the horse is going the way you want, you can just put a little slack on the reins. And I was thinking about if there's slack on the reins, the horse probably just thinks it's in control. It's just kind of going along. Everything's fine. But then the tension on the reins comes, and the horses turn everywhere that the reins send them. Reminds the horse who is actually in control. And so at the risk of taking this analogy a little bit too far, let's just take it one step farther. Who exactly is holding the reins? I mean, check out verses 7 and 8. People can tame and already have tamed every kind of animal, bird, reptile, and fish. No one can tame the tongue, though. I mean, James is pretty clear, I think. You are not holding the reins. A horse doesn't hold his own reins. You know, if it did, and if you held your reins, then you'd be in control of your mouth, James is saying. But you're not, so obviously someone else has the reins. I'm just trying to flesh out what I think James is saying. And James uses another image that's similar. He says a sailboat, you know, it takes a ton of wind to move it, but it's got this tiny little rudder. And the rudder steers the whole ship. And I was thinking maybe if James were writing these days, he'd talk about the steering wheel of a tractor trailer truck or like the yoke, the stick on the 747. You know, this tiny little thing that steers this huge other thing. And, you know, just to make sure that we understand how bad the situation is, James uses one more image. He says that the tongue brings about evil like a tiny flame brings about a forest fire. And this is how the Common English Bible translates it, translation puts it. He says, think about this. A small flame can set a whole forest on fire. The tongue is a small flame of fire, a world of evil at work in us. It contaminates our entire lives. Because of it, the circle of life is set on fire. The tongue itself is set on fire by the flames of hell. Again, there's little doubt who James thinks is in control of most tongues. And I'm sure that most of us don't have to think long to come up with times when we ourselves have said something hurtful. And if we'd only been in control of our tongue, we would have saved ourselves and others a lot of pain and grief. I think part of the message is that we have an enemy who wants to hold the reins to the tongue of every Christian and set fires of conflict all over the place. We have an enemy who wants to set tongues ablaze with careless words, you know, causing pain and tearing relationships apart. We have an enemy who wants us to speak words of gossip about our brothers and sisters in the church. And, you know, gossip is really just when you say something bad about people who aren't there to defend themselves. And sometimes, you know, it is just saying openly nasty things about someone behind their back. But often it's sneakier than that. You know, someone comes to you and says, "I just need to vent." And you heard that, right? It's a pretty sure sign that gossip is coming your way. But the tongue is serious business. And I remember in youth group growing up, one of the kids there used some bad language around one of the older ladies in the church. And she turned to him and she said, you probably heard this one, she said, "And you're going to go kiss your mother with those lips?" She could tell that one stuck with me. That's pretty much what James is saying. He says, with the tongue, we both bless the Lord and Father and curse human beings made in God's likeness. Blessing and cursing coming from the same mouth. My brothers and sisters, it shouldn't be this way. Now, I know that none of us would be like this, but you know, there are some people who come to worship on Sunday and they sing, you know, "Praise God from whom all blessings flow." And they sing, you know, "All I need is you." And then with the same tongue, they go and they grumble about their brothers and sisters. And James says that's messed up. You know, it shouldn't be that way. What? So, you know, okay, great. It's bad. We get it. What's the good news? What's the hope? Well, a plain reading of this little chunk of James doesn't really give us a lot of hope. On the surface, James doesn't seem to be giving us a path forward. He says we cannot tame the tongue. And I think it's because of things like this, you know, kind of dead ends like this in James, that Martin Luther, the great reformer of the church, he didn't find good news in the book of James. He called it an epistle of straw. But hold up, Martin Luther. You know, if we take a look again at verses 11 and 12, I think it points us in the right direction. Both fresh water and salt water don't come from the same spring, do they? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree produce olives? Can a grapevine produce figs? Of course not. And fresh water doesn't flow from a saltwater spring either. James seems to have little patience for a heart that is divided. And those verses reminded me of this thing that Jesus said, what fills the heart comes out of the mouth. And just one verse before that, Jesus said, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For the tree is known by its fruit. Another place, Jesus says, a good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor a bad tree good fruit. You know, what's the point? I mean, switching the analogies just a bit. If you don't, we know that it's the case that you don't tend to find out what's inside of you unless you're squeezed. Because what comes out of you, because when you're squeezed, stuff comes out, right? What comes out of you when you are squeezed? If you got bad stuff inside of you, bad stuff comes out. If you got good stuff inside of you, good stuff is going to come out. And so for all of his harsh words, I really think that James is not trying to discourage us. I think he's trying to get people who have fallen asleep to wake up. He's trying to get people whose love for Christ has grown cold over the years, perhaps, and to get them to fan it into flame again. James wants to remind them that they're not just made to give lip service to God one day a week, but they're meant to live moment to moment in deep friendship with God, praising God rather than cursing their brothers and sisters. We can't tame our tongues. We cannot. But we can call in the reinforcements. I just have to go here. Have you ever been to the Renaissance Festival? Ever been to medieval times? You see, have you ever seen the jousting? That's what we need. Because we got someone on our back that we don't want there. And we need Jesus to ride in on the white horse and knock him to the ground. And then we need him to hop on and take the reins himself. You know, we might not be able to control our tongues. James says we cannot. But we can ask the Lord to put a bridle on us. We can say, Jesus, take the reins. And then God will do the miraculous thing. It is like that hymn that Charles Wesley didn't write. It's sung by Duchess or someone Underwood. You know, Jesus, take the reins. Anyway, take them from my hands. I can't do this on my own. Something like that. I don't know. Not a Charles Wesley, after all. That was like a 12-year-old too late joke. Oh, well. X that one off for next time. But this is the essence of the Christian walk. It's a paradox that proves itself true. If you want to remain in control, you will remain out of control. But if you surrender the reins to Jesus, if you give control away, you'll find yourself with a freedom that you didn't know you were missing. And friendship with God, it isn't something that happens on one Sunday morning. It usually takes a lot of prayer to stop saying, my will be done, and to start saying, thy will be done, and actually mean it. Because, you know, a wild horse isn't broken overnight. It takes a lot of training. And that's basically what Christian discipleship is. It's asking Jesus to train you, to form you, until at last you are transformed. So my brothers and sisters, may you believe that Jesus is able to clean you up on the inside. May you believe that Jesus wants to clean you up on the inside. And may you all and we all renew our resolve to have Jesus take the reins so that we can be the same people in every time, in every place we go to bring blessing to everyone we meet. Amen.